Welcome to the Mike and Doug Show. I'm Doug. Hi, Mike.
I'm Mike. Nice to see you.
Yeah, and it's great to be seen, and especially because we both have hats on, and there's so much garbage falling from the sky. I guess we have to wear a hat these days just to protect ourselves.
It's true.
But today, it's exciting because after all the research that you've done, and every time you research something, isn't it a coincidence where it always goes back to? It goes right back to basically the hungover principle of monarchy. And then we look closely and we find that anyone associated with the monarchy has complete impunity. They're immune from all prosecution. They can do whatever they want. They can take over the world. They can depopulate. They can spike our pharmaceutical products. They can make the world basically worship petroleum. And I'm basically describing this whole British process. And I realized today, once I put my hat on, that what we're really working with is a new form of monarchy with Cecil Rhodes and N.M. Rothschild and Lord Rosebery and Lord Pirbright. We have a new, these are kings of corporatocracy. This is right. A new monarchy. Mm-hmm. And there you can't even ask a question about them. Why? Because they married into the entire media of the time, all the writing, all the newspapers, and then of course all communication. And it comes back to today's main point that I want to ask you about, which the whole world has always wondered about this. When the Rothschilds sent their carrier pigeon off and got it back with information about Napoleon's defeat, and they made a fortune off of that, who was it that sent the carrier pigeon? And today, you and your miners are going to be able to answer that. So tell us a little bit about this CEO of Pfeiffer, which led you into this very deep hole of even understanding some of the deepest secrets of the Rothschilds about their brokers, their bankers, and their processes.
Well, just when we thought we couldn't be surprised by this research, our heads are swimming now. Because what we're seeing is a continuing, I don't know, corrupts, not even a strong enough word, bloodline lineage that just keeps going back in time. And we started off looking at, his name is Albert Bourla. He's the CEO of Pfizer. And he's all over the news right now. And he, there are more pictures of him out in the internet than Carter has liver pills, but didn't know much about him. And we knew Pfizer was corrupt. We knew Pfizer was all associated with AstraZeneca and the Wellcome Trust and the Pirbright Institute and the British Research Institute that was funding all this biowarfare activity that's been going on for over 100 years. And so we knew he was related to that, but we hadn't actually looked at him. And so, as we normally do, we just started looking to see what was out there. And very quickly, we discovered that about a year ago, he had a propaganda bonanza out there. There was all kinds of information about him. And there was all kinds of information out there about his parents, which, as you know, we've always seen as a, when somebody doesn't talk about their parents, that's a telltale sign something's wrong. But in this case, there was a lot of information that he himself had distributed a year ago about his parents, Moise and Sarah Bourla, B-U-R-L-A, Bourla. His spelling is a derivation, later derivation, but Bourla was the name of the family. So we just started reading what was out there, and it became, you know, once you read the propaganda of these globalists, it all starts to read the same. Their rhetorical techniques are the same. Their attempts to grab some emotional pull are always the same. And in his case, his story wrapped himself tightly in the gas chambers at Auschwitz-Birkenau, and his Jewish story. And so we started looking into that, and we discovered that he had a whole very well-crafted story about how his most of his family perished in the roundup of Sephardic Jews in Thessaloniki in Greece, and that he, his father, and brother, his uncles escaped that and went and hid in Athens, and survived the war, but were never caught. And we've got all these stories that even some of the reviewers with the Israel Times, the Times of Israel, said read like a novel. It was too perfect. And so then we started, our spidey sense went up, and we started getting suspicious that he was doing some sort of end run on people really finding out who his parents are and what was really going on with his family story. So that's how we got into this. And then we started going down various rabbit holes, which I'm going to just mention involved the Churchills. And so with that, I'm going to stop, Douglas, because I know you've read all this, and you've got some perspectives on that.
Well, the perspective is, as the CEO of Pfizer, I always assumed that they were just horrifyingly corrupt, but I didn't know that it was going to get British on me so quickly. Right. I had no idea that it would go back to the same old story, which is, it's like Burroughs' welcome, you know. They went to Britain, they started making pills, which was better than the snake oil liquids that everyone all around the world were taking.
Maybe they all had talc in them.
Yeah, they might have, and they might have had cannabis and hemp and all kind, you know, opium and all, you know, poppy seeds. So, you know, what these pills, when you know that 50% of the time you take a pill, you're going to heal yourself by the placebo effect. Well, then, you know, really, your business is already a surety from the beginning. So Burroughs' welcome, and the plan from the beginning was, how sick can we make people so that we can sell them snake oil? Yeah, that's what we're dealing with right now. How sick can we make people with made up supposed virus X, and then what can we sell them to get rid of it? It's kind of like people always say, this is the Hegelian dilemma there. You know, you create the problem and then you show the counter, and then you come back to the middle, which you planned on from the beginning, which was to sell you product. And that's exactly right. What's going on here. And what you have with Pfizer, oh my goodness, don't get me started on the details of what they're doing now, because there's nothing good to report. Matter of fact, all of the reports are now being seen transparently to be not good for you. And, you know, they've had some of the biggest lawsuits in history, and they've been always right there making money off of people's illness.
Well, we looked at his family, and one of the things that we discovered early on is the Times of Israel identified his real name, which was Israel Abraham Burla, B-U-R-L-A. And, okay, fine, people change their name when they come to the U.S., But this seemed a little bit odd, because that's such an obviously Jewish name, that we started looking into the Burla family, or the Borla family, whichever. And we discover that, I would say, summarizing it, that the Burla family is about as close as you can get to Jewish royalty in the history of Israel. And we're Palestine, really, because this goes back to the 1700s, at least to the 1600s. It's a rabbinical, Sephardic rabbinical family that has lived in Palestine, and there's a long history of that family, and there's a long history from the 1700s of writing about reforming Israel, which they called Eretz Israel, and that was one of their dreams. And then we see these early Burlas even making trips to Europe to try to drum up support for reforming a Jewish homeland in Palestine. And that went on for several hundred years. So what we see first is that the Burla name is well known in Israel, and therefore having one of their favorite sons, Alfred Borla, or Israel Abraham Birla as the head of Pfizer was probably a heady fact that was sort of secret to the Jews of Israel. None of us, I didn't know it, and there was very little written about it prior to last year. But last year, he goes into great, exquisite detail on certain aspects of his family's, I'm going to say alleged, because I think there's a lot of this story that's probably made up. Their capture by the Germans, and that the bulk of his family, he says, died at Auschwitz, but provides not a single detail to corroborate that idea. And then they also provide his family name and his mother and father, and we did verify that those are his family, his parents, Moise and Sarah. And what we then learn in the in looking at his father is that his father and his uncle were in the distillery business. They made ouzo, and that during the war they fled to Athens and worked for the Red Cross. Well, we know that the Red Cross is corrupt. That's well known. What we also discovered is that they were working for the Red Cross at the very same time as the Bodmer, I can't remember his first name, Bodmer was the president of the Red Cross. And as it turns out, the Bodmer family provided the land up in Switzerland that is used to this day by the World Economic Forum. And Klaus Schwab lives on the Bodmer Castle estate. He attended elementary school and lived in Bodmer Castle. So, you know, quickly we start seeing these connections to the other corruptocrats that we've been tracking. And so what we didn't hear a single word about was how it was that his father and his uncle could have survived in Athens without capture. And as we learned from the Jerusalem Post, I believe, they not only were full-time employed by the Red Cross, but they appear to have been some sort of courier between Greece and the Middle East, because what we do know from the activities of the British Pilgrim Society, they were actively organizing a British Zionism that would then colonize Israel or Palestine at the end of World War II, so that the British would be able to control resources in the Middle East from Israel. And what we now have been able to discover is that there was a deal with the devil done between the British Pilgrims, or the pre-Pilgrims, actually. This goes back to 1841, and one of Winston Churchill's relatives, and Sir Moses Montefiore. And you mentioned earlier the person who sent the carrier pigeon message that Napoleon lost at Waterloo back to London, and that was the origins of the Rothschilds' original fortune. That was Sir Moses Montefiore. He wasn't a knight yet, but that he was sent by the Rothschilds down to Waterloo to monitor the situation, and they got the information back, and that's how the real Rothschild fortune began, was through Sir Moses Montefiore. And I'm not going to go into the details of his background, other than that he was N.M. Rothschild's brother-in-law. Two of his children married Rothschilds, and so this was a very tight family connection. Moses was a little younger than N.M. Rothschild, and then was a prime mover with the Jews of Britain in the development of the idea of British Zionism. But the real critical thing here is to what were the origins of Zionism? We've always assumed that it had something to do with Jews wanting to reform the ancient state of Israel. And that's true. And the Birlas wrote about that for centuries. That was their dream. But what we now see is that there was a very specific financial deal cut between Moses Montefiore and N.M. Rothschild and the Birlas and other Jewish leaders, whereby that they in Israel would support the British coming in and they would support becoming a British protectorate. And part of the deal was that even though they couldn't pay the Rothschilds at the time for this deal, they would make sure that going forward, there would be plenty of commercial opportunities for the Rothschilds to exploit. And so there you have the beginning of British Zionism. 1841, June 14th, 1841, there we have letters exchanged back and forth between Montefiore and, yeah, I can hear you.
Well, you know, this just underscores the idea that Montefiore was his broker. And when have you ever heard any of the Rothschild conspiracies nail who was actually doing the dirty work for them with the, you know, their brokers and their bankers? Right. You know, they were, of course, bankers. And then also with Cecil Rhodes, isn't it just amazing that W.T. Stead had to be married into that group of the richest men of the time who wanted to take over the world? Always, it's money plus media equals the new monarchy.
Stop. You're frozen. I can't see you. I can hear you, but I can't see you.
We know that.
Okay.
We're going to let you go on.
Okay.
And maybe I'll come back.
Okay. So the 1841 trigger that created British Zionism was a series of letters written back and forth between Charles Henry Churchill and Sir Moses Montefiore. And when you read these letters, it's very obvious that these letters were pretext. In other words, you send me a letter, I'll send you a letter. You send me another letter and I'll pretend that I'm thinking about it and I'll send you back one agreeing to it. That's this sequence of letters. And it was all triggered by this Colonel, Charles Henry Churchill. So there we have a Churchill. We didn't know how he was related to Winston Churchill, but we started looking into the ancestry of Charles Henry Churchill. Now this is a tale of a shell game of British ancestry that is unusual, because most of the time they're very accurate about their ancestries, but in this case the ancestries went vague. And where we ended up was that he was probably the great grandson of what's her name, Anne Oldfield, who was an actress working in London. And that as the story goes, I've got to get these names right because there's so many intertwined Churchill names. She apparently was cared for or potentially was the paramour for Lieutenant General Charles Churchill, who at the time was the groom of the bedchamber for George II. And I didn't know what groom of the bedchamber was, but I do now. He basically helped them get dressed, undressed, worked in and around the king's bedroom. And by the way, we need to point out that George II was the first Hanoverian king in England at the time. So we're talking about German ancestry. Then we stumbled, not stumbled, but it's really well known that Anne Oldfield was buried and interred in Westminster Abbey, which is very odd. And even on the records of Westminster Abbey, they say it's odd that she would be allowed to be buried in Westminster Abbey, but she was. And they said it was a magnificent funeral. And it appears that our Charles Henry Churchill that triggered Zionism was related to her as a great-grandson. Now, what we now believe is that being Lieutenant General Charles Churchill, being the groom of the bedchamber, meant that there may have been some funny business going on. And specifically that it is well known from history that Anne Oldfield was promiscuous, as was George II. So it's possible that Lieutenant General Churchill, the Lord of the Bed or the groom of the bedchamber, may have organized some activity between and Oldfield and George II.
Dalliance.
Yeah, Dalliance. That's what I was trying to think of. And that it's looking very likely that the relatives of Charles Henry Churchill came out of that union. And then, in fact, the Churchill name was borrowed from the groom of the bedchamber so as not to tie it directly to King George II. And the reason we think that is because she was given a huge high honor by being interred in Westminster Abbey, which is usually only reserved for a few people, like besides the kings and the queens, is Sir Isaac Newton or Princess Diana, people like that, but never an actress in London, and never a magnificent funeral. So what we believe is that Anne and King George had a child, and Lieutenant General Charles Churchill, the groom of the bedchamber, took that child in and raised him as his own. That's what we think happened. So if that is true, then that means that the entire Churchill line from that point forward may have emerged from this illegitimate relationship, which in one sense is neither here nor there. It may have happened, but here's the point. What we now see is that every time we turn around and try to trace back these corruptocrats today, like Albert Bourla, we keep running into this mentality, this debauchery, this promiscuity, this adultery that seems to permeate all of these families. And as we have talked about in the past, it looks like there's sort of a demon organizing principle here. It's well beyond some committee sitting around trying to figure out how to make sure these families all survive. We believe we're looking at and reading about a demon that is directing the British Empire and has been certainly in the modern era, but it looks like it's going back to George II. And as we know, because we've gotten calls from various people in the United Kingdom, the more and more English people and Scots and Welsh and Irish are starting to make a distinction on their own between their nationality and the British. And so we can see here that this British line that goes all the way up to the current Queen is all Hanoverian German line, and that what they're saying is that that may have all been illegitimate, and that's why we see this layering of centuries of bad laws, of corruption, of oppression, as these demons have been organizing a way to basically subdue humanity. That's what we're seeing, and you can't. These are facts, so you can interpret it another way if you like, but that's what we're seeing.
I like to call them followers of Mammon or worshippers of Mammon, of wealth.
Yeah.
And really, it's also power. And then the hubris that comes with that, then they always have to write their own narrative of why they are the elite, whether they're Aryans or whether they're pure English or whether they're, you know, they always have a justification for their bloodline. Now, what I find interesting is that just like with Moses, Montefiore being the broker of Rothschild, that they were on one end of it, and now you get to see Bourla on that other end that is so critical, the end of the pharmaceutical control of right. The world, which is also now in food. So when we say pharmaceuticals, we're talking about Muriel Animal Hospital has the contracts for the largest amount of domestic feed that is impregnated by them, Muriel, with vaccines. And that's where we're headed. We're talking about a Purbright Institute that created Creutzfeldt-Jakob mad cow disease that transferred to humans and became spongiform encephalitis. These are the same people. And so Pfizer, I didn't know this until I got into this investigation. that Pfizer gets a piece of every single pharmaceutical contract in America, just like I believe it is AstraZeneca gets a piece of everything in Britain. No matter who does it, doesn't matter. Any pharmaceutical company can do what they want, but they're the keys of it.
That's consistent with the whole issue of patent pooling. So what they've done is they have used their corporate relationships to pool their control. And so where they can't get it through some sort of certificate, they just align these corporations so that they all roll up to one. That's consistent.
That is so true. Then, you know, when you have AstraZeneca, they killed more people with that vaccine to the point that 20 or more nations stopped using it. China forbid using it. All kinds of countries forbid having AstraZeneca vaccines used. And of course, they were the last iteration of GlaxoSmithKline, which was an iteration of Wellcome and Burroughs Wellcome, which was, you know, and then you know all about the ICI and Mond and all this chemical manipulation of the world, but chemical right into the human bloodstream. And that's the part that is the most disturbing, that these people are truly psychopathic in that they believe that they should live and others should die simply because of their blood lineage or because they are rich or because they're a bastard child of George II or whatever their justification is.
Yeah, well, the more current information that we've had for a long time, for years, is the work that the Rothschild, Victor Rothschild, and now Jacob Rothschild, into our current time, were doing with GlaxoSmithKline, with the Wellcome Trust, and with Pfizer, and specifically around genetic editing, gene editing, CRISPR editing. And we discovered in the archives of Sidney Brenner, who was one of the Nobel Prize winners in this area, that we found a handwritten letter from Lord Rothschild, or actually from Sidney Brenner to Lord Rothschild, where they're specifically discussing how they're going to carry forward genetic editing. And this letter was written soon after Rothschild delivered a report to Parliament recommending that Britain essentially take control of the future biotechnology investing, which Britain really didn't do, but the Rothschilds did big time. And we've provided specific Financial Times articles to prove that. But specifically, this letter talked about how they were using English old folks' homes for some of their gene editing testing. And then the other thing that was shocking is that Brenner confirmed that Rothschild was talking to him about using Israel and the unique characteristics of Jewish blood for their other testing. And Brenner was basically agreeing with that and had already in this letter gotten down to how Rothschild was going to pay for it. So here's the question. We know recently that Bibi Netanyahu called Bourla something like 30 times. This is in the Jerusalem Times. And specifically pushing Bourla to make their first deliveries of the Pfizer vaccine available in Israel. And there's actually an article that shows the picture of the first crates coming into Israel. And the way they tell the story was kind of odd because they said that Bibi was obsessive and called Bourla something like 30 times. I don't believe that. I mean, 30 times? A prime minister you're going to call 30 times? So the point here is that what we see now is Israel is the most jabbed country on the planet. And it's all related to the Pfizer vaccine, which is Bourla, who is really carrying out Rothschild plan to use the Israeli population for doing their genetic testing. Now, what are they trying to do? Knock all their fellow Jews off? What's going on here? Do you have any idea, Douglas?
Yes, well, you know, like with the Nazis, everybody said that Hitler hated the Jews and that it was the Jewish bankers. Those Jewish bankers were his friends. He didn't hate Jewish bankers.
Yeah.
And those Jewish bankers happened to also be Germans who then became British. And then the British bankers, as well as Union Bank and the other Harriman banks, Brown Brothers Harriman, they loaned money to Hitler. Everybody loaned money to Hitler. And why is that? Because he said he was that special race. He was the Aryan race, and he was fighting for them. And then he said the Jews were the opposite. They were, you know, they were Semitic. So we have to kill them all because they're the nasty bankers who created World War I and all the other stuff. Well, it is true that the nasty bankers created World War I and World War II and all the other wars. But there are two types of Zionism at that time. There was political Zionism, and those were Hitler's friends. And then there are the Zionists who were the proto-Zionists, who were really Jewish rabbis who said, we need to have our land back. We need to stop the diaspora. We need to have and claim our own land. And then the British got behind that. And as you pointed out, Moses.
Well, I think the British, capitalized on that notion they had and essentially exploited it. And it's so common, isn't it? For any of us who've worked in nonprofit, one of the things you always know is that the people who are the bigger donors get more of your attention than others. And I see that's what's going on here, that these rabbis in Israel were being presented with a, how can I say no, proposal from Colonel Charles Henry Churchill to essentially allow the British to take over control of Palestine as long as the rabbis got what they wanted, which was Eretz Israel, another Jewish homeland. And so the Rothschilds exploited this desire, and now it looks like they're trying to kill them all off, frankly.
And they made it look like British Fabianism and John Ruskin's settlement
right.
movement, and then what the YMCA did, and then what the Red Cross did, which is basically get those people out of Britain that the rich thought were the indigent populations, including the Jews that were not the rich Jewish bankers. They were going to send the Rothschilds over to start kibbutzes in Israel as a
right.
settlement project. They were sending those that they didn't want. And so I still believe to this day that the greatest Zionists in the world do not live in Israel, and that they really don't care about the people of Israel. That's their fodder. And I feel great compassion for them that they're going into their fourth shot. Well, but you see, vaccines have always been, since the Boer War, what the rich elite that we know of as Cecil Rhodes Group and later Alfred Milner and all these people that you have and your group has brought out so clearly, written a new truth history for us, that they were always interested in creating vaccines. Why? Because vaccines are experimental in its nature doing the work. It's not them. So if anybody dies, they're not culpable. To this day, Pfizer is not, they're not culpable for any of their vaccines, though they own many vaccines and they make billions of dollars a year off of them. They are completely immune from prosecution. They have complete impunity to create any drug they want. And sometimes they get sued, and they've had three or four of the largest lawsuits in pharmaceutical history. But basically, their big business is vaccines, because a vaccine is protected by the government. It is a government corporation interlocking connection that basically equals a monopoly that can't be stopped, because once the government creates the monopoly itself is self-perpetuating. And we've seen that with so many things coming out of this British corporatocracy, this monocracy, this monarchy of British corporatocracy. And that's not easy to say.
Imperial corporatism.
There you go.
Add evil to it. Evil imperial corporatism. So we've got this line of royalty, including, you'd have to put Churchill in that camp. And Churchill's one of those, you know, we've all been raised with this propaganda about Churchill, with the cigar and the radio broadcast and things like this. And so it's really been difficult for me to see Churchill keep popping up in these events and not be forced to change my view. My view has changed now. we saw Churchill hovering over the first Imperial press conference in 1909. We know that he was a co-founder of the Pilgrim Society. We know that he was a war correspondent in the Boer War and lied to the British public about what was going on. He embellished every story to make the British look good and the Boers look bad. And so now we see that his relatives were all fingered in various nefarious activities going all the way back to George II. And as you've said many times, when you take an evil person and they affect a change in law, then the law itself becomes demonic. And that everything coming out of that law in relation to other laws just adds layering onto the demonism. And don't we see that all of these people are closely associated with the Inner Temple and the legal system in England, and they have exported that whole way of thinking to the United States. These are very clever, demonic lawyers who have manipulated our laws for so long, for so many centuries, that we don't even recognize what their laws are. All we hear is the propaganda about the founders and the principles that we all believe in. But that's not what's being acted out here.
These bank lords of the City of London got together with the pharmaceutical lords, and they got together with the media lords, yep. And they found they were more powerful than the British Parliament. And literally, Rosebery, didn't he become the head
Prime
of
Minister.
Yeah,
he was Prime Minister in 1894.
How much more power could he want? But that wasn't good enough. That's the reason that today, anytime you want to talk about any of the people who are part of this corporate monarchy or the aristocrats who worship them, you're always going to go back to the same plan that they had to begin with. And that, like Churchill, he was a yellow journalist. If you don't merge the media, like W.T. Stead was the media. He was a major media guy who worked with Cecil Rhodes and was going to basically propagandize, just like Churchill propagandized the yellow journalism of the Boer War. It was a very both of them were very unpopular, the second one especially. And what happened? Oh, they charged right ahead because Alfred Milner wanted to have as much power as Cecil Rhodes had. Remember, Cecil Rhodes took over the gold, the diamonds, had a country named after him, created wars and no one did anything about it, went back to Britain, was seen as the perfect model of corporatism.
Yep.
The monarch of corporatism. He was the king of corporatism. And who was his good buddy? N.M. Rothschild. The king.
Well, Rothschild was was the trustee of his Rhodes Trust that started dishing out money to Oxford students. So they had every angle covered, and they had the gold and the diamonds flowing out of South Africa to pay for all this stuff. And they haven't stopped. They've just continued to use that wealth to cajole, bribe, threaten, whatever they had to do to get what they wanted to this current moment where we're seeing the death of the American Republic that we thought we had, which we've got to be honest, we probably haven't had a republic in 100 years, but they've made us on Main Street think we had, and because we didn't realize what was going on with their propaganda schemes and their various psychological, what do they call that now? Mass, what's that term that's coming out now? Mass psychosis.
Mass formation psychology.
Yeah, mass formation psychosis. So what we are all doing is reprogramming ourselves with truth history so that as we move forward, and that's what I see as one of our roles and our team's role, is just to get the facts out there so that we can start reprogramming all these various assumptions we've made. And in a sense, we have believed the lies, the demonic lies, and that has affected the way we make decisions. We need to get back to knowing what the truth is so that our decisions can be based on something that will last. And that's what I hope happens here. This Birla guy is a cardboard cutout. He was selected for this role, And he's from a centuries-old Sephardic Jewish family, and he is married to the Rothschilds, the Montefiores, and the British Pilgrim Society. He's taking orders just like all these other cutouts, like Zuckerberg.
When Pfizer joined with BioNTech or BioNTech, the one who invented messenger RNA and did the most exploration on it, basically he became a Jew leading the new Holocaust. Mm-hmm. Because look what he's done to Israel. Four shots now, and now 75 to 85% of the people in their hospital beds are completely vaccinated. The vaccines obviously are doing the opposite of what he says they do. He's like the tobacco industry experts who were called in when they were sued and had to pay up $4.5 billion. They ask all of them, do you smoke? No. Do your children smoke? No. Do you know anyone in your family that smokes? No. Because yeah. They all knew what it was. Pfizer and the staff of Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson, as well as the politicians in the House and the Senate and throughout the whole parts of the federal government, any true politician is immune from wearing a mask or getting vaccines. That should tell you exactly what's going on. And so he is consciously, not only now is he a worshiper of Mammon, because of course he's in that position for money, but he's a worshiper of Moloch, who they used to claim that the Israelis would offer children to, and that Moloch would eat the children, basically, they'd throw them into the fire. Well, you know, that is not in any way an analogy. He has thrown his own people into the fire, as well as all of the rest of us, because he knew full well that the messenger RNA had nothing to do with the vaccine. It is not a vaccine. But if you call it a vaccine and you rewrite the laws, which the lobbyists for Pfizer have rewritten all of our laws, the emergency and pandemic preparedness right. laws and the Cures Act and all these things, no politician has ever read those acts.
They've layered on the demonic laws. Right. And we still respect those laws. Somehow we've got to get past that. These are not legitimate. When they're based on evil, they're not legitimate. So how do we unlayer that?
We have to basically hold up every law to the litmus test of being constitutional and not violating the Bill of Rights. Let's go back to Israel for a minute, because people here, perfect example of what we're talking about. The brainwashing hypnotism or mass formation psychology that they say it doesn't exist. Hello, mass hypnosis exists. What do you think? There's entire beings like Kreskin, who I've met a few times. He hypnotizes the whole audience, you know, and we're all hypnotized, and he gets us to believe whatever he wants. Okay. He does it, and he performed more than any other performer.
I've never heard that you knew Kreskin.
I met Kreskin three times. I got to really? Talk with him. I got to give him a reading. Yeah. So anyway, that's the type of magic hypnosis that's going on here. So when you say Israel, oh no, you better stop and say, let's see, who considers Jerusalem, old Jerusalem, to be the most sacred ground on the earth? Well, that would be the Christians, yes. And the Israelis, the Jews, the ancient Hebrews, yes. But who owns half of it? The Queen British. Of England.
Right.
The British do.
Right.
And who sent them into the war? Who gave them their weapons to start their first their war? That basically Zionism, you know, was claiming a homeland for Israel. The same people. These would be British Jews who changed their name so that people don't even know they're Jewish, who don't like Jewish people because they're using them as settlers to go into a land to keep everything destabilized, but with the Arab nations in the Levant. But really, what's it for? It's for the oil in the Mediterranean, and it's for the oil in the Golan Heights, which Don the Khan gave Golan Heights to who? Jacob Rothschild and Murdoch and Cheney and all the same old corruptocrats, right? This is the same thing going on today. So when you say Israel, you have to say British-controlled Israel. And as you always point out, when you say China, you have to say British-controlled China, or when you say Russia, you have to say, because they're the ones who sent over the leaders to control these countries, you'd have to say British-controlled Russian communism right. or Chinese communism.
During the Bolshevik period.
The Brits.
Right. Yeah, this is all, and that's where the idea that we're not looking at a single person. We're looking at a demon. We're looking at mammon. We're looking at a spiritual entity that's driving these people into oblivion. And hopefully we're not going to be driven with them because we've got the angels on our side, God on our side. And that now that these demons are being identified, we need to call on them to identify themselves publicly so that we can start addressing the great evil that they have foisted on humanity all these many centuries.
Fauci worships the Lord of the Flies. How do I know this? Because the biosafety labs in Kazakhstan, let's just take that right now. Okay, so Kazakhstan is now overrun by Putin, right? Because they stood up and they said, we're not going to believe your lies about vaccines and this and that. Very unhappy with, what's his name, Nuru Sultan, the ex-president of Kazakhstan, the guy who created, I always say it wrong, Astanza, this amazing city for the United Nations out in the middle of the desert, all from their oil. But anyway, so when all this emergency happens, which we have no idea of, because I'm not going to even speculate on what's happening there, because we don't have any truth ever.
We have coming. No information.
No truth.
It's so
coming
far away.
Putin is never going to tell you the truth. You have to be kidding. If you believe Putin, you'd believe President Xi of China. You'd have to be stupid to believe anything they ever say publicly. But anyway, he now has control of almost two dozen biosafety labs, some of them P4 labs. And what they're doing there is they're this is unbelievable, because I've gone back and I've read the documents. Fauci is paying Kazakhstan biosafety labs to gather viruses from Russia so that we can gain a function, turn them into bioweapons. So Fauci is leading what the pharmaceutical companies can't. But now the pharmaceuticals have gotten in and they said what? We're going to have medical countermeasures. We're not going to do bioweapons. We're going to have medical countermeasures. And that sounds very healthy. That's for everybody's safety and security. And so what they're really doing is they are experimenting on humans with bioweapons right now. And they're not going to be happy until they make the worst ones that literally can't be stopped and could literally kill all of humanity or even all living things on the earth. That's when they'll stop. Because scientists are the biggest egotists on the face of the earth. They only want to discover things so they can put their name on it, right?
Right.
When in fact, all they did was observe it. They didn't discover anything. The same forces had been active and the same beings behind those forces long before the scientists came along and superglued their name onto what they observed. So what we're observing here is Fauci is literally taking on, I would say, a hierarchical demon, and he's leading the Lord of the Flies to turn us into what the book, The Lord of the Flies, is all about, turning us all into cannibals, because that's what's in the vaccines, human tissue. So everyone who gets that injected into them became a cannibal, Lord of the Flies. That's why I'm going to now call him Lord of the Flies. And these biolabs are everywhere. And so anybody who wanted money got it from Fauci. We know of at least 24 different biosafety labs that are P4, which have all of the same viruses. And where are they? Oh, they're in Pakistan. They're in Israel. They're in Russia. They're in China. They're in many satellite countries of the USSR, so Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, all the places where the CIA work out of, that's where these biosafety labs are. Because why? They're gathering weapons to use against humanity. Whether it be,
can I stop you a minute?
Yeah.
You said CIA. Don't say CIA. Say MI6.
That's right. OSS. We'd have to say the
No, not OSS. They're gone. MI6. Is who's driving this for the pilgrims.
I would also call it the British created CIA.
they do.
Because that's all they're interested in is the corporations, and who owns most of the corporations? The Queen owns the golden share, or British interests.
Well,
for instance, let me just point out that when they dug in Golan Heights with Genie Oil, that Jacob Rothschild was not only there, but he had gotten money as the agent for OPEC, to be the agent to take a loan Jacob Rothschild took a loan from the United States of America, two loans, and another loan from USAID. And that's how they drilled to find the oil for Genie when they already knew it was there. So they really didn't need that money. So they kept that money. Then who kept the profits? They did.
Yeah.
That's the kind of deal that we're working with. We always have vets, we call them crown agents. The crown agents right. always get their tax, their piece of the pie, and crown agents are Pilgrim Society members.
Well, what we looked at in 1946 was how in post-war world, the British MI6, MI5, and GCHQ took over the organization of world intelligence. And we Americans allowed them to do that in London. And Churchill was monitoring that activity at the time. And I could never understand how these guys that I had always lionized, or I'd believed the propaganda, would allow that to happen. And now we know why. Churchill was an agent of the Pilgrims who was organizing not only the banking and the Marshall Fund, but the Marshall Plan, but he was also organizing all of the post-war activities that were going to continue to consolidate this global Pilgrim Society plan for a new world order. And that's why the CIA and NSA were then created out of that agreement where the British were going to drive it. So the British have been in charge the whole time.
Totally, totally. And many see Churchill as the enemy of the British people and the real person who started World War II, because all the rest of the people, the monarchy and the aristocrats, they were all for Hitler. They were loaning him money. All the banks had loaned him money. The ex-monarch who had abdicated was over there marching the streets with a swastika band on his arm. I mean, the Americans, everybody was loaning Hitler money and thinking he was just a dandy guy. And then Churchill came along and said, no, absolutely not. This is war. And basically upon very, very slim pretense, here's what happened. They just didn't answer in time. And that there was a stupid treaty that people were trying to interpret it. And when they came to a stalemate and they couldn't go any further, the British just interpreted it as, well, this is war. So when it comes down to it, Churchill is the father of World War II, because he knew full well what the bankers had already done. He was already raised up into the highest levels of the government. And again, why? Because of the sick British worship of the monarchy, that George II might have had a bastard son, and therefore he needs to become the prime minister and should be able to stand up against the monarchy itself if he wants to, because he's a corporatist trained by the Cecil Rhodes Group and Alfred Milner themselves.
There you go.
It's sad that Trump had to sit. His big deal in all of going to Britain and all the whole visit was to sit in Churchill's leather chair.
Mm-hmm. Well, the history of the world has got to be rewritten, and we've got to realize that Hitler was not our friend. Another thing we just discovered the other day, we discovered a 1969 list of the Pilgrim Society members in the United States. We found it in congressional records, and guess who one of the members was? Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Oh yes, you had said this.
That's I'd never seen it. I'd suspected it, but now we've seen it in the record.
He was
so every president we've had.
He hosted the death of John F. Kennedy.
Right, and he sent us to the Vietnam War. I mean, I see war movies now, and I just can't watch them with the same feelings anymore, because I realize that these bastards, and I'm using that in a technical term, were sending our innocent young men and women to their deaths so that they could play their games with world control. That is the lowest form of I don't even know the right word. Nefarious evil activity that one could possibly imagine, that all of these wars and all that death was so that they could play their little power games.
Those were human sacrifice.
Yeah.
Plain and simple, by people who reveled in their bloodlust and the blood offering. And that's just a fact. And they would have to, because they did it every day of their life and continued to do it, taught it to their children, and they've taught it from generation to generation. And they have not backed off one iota. If anything, they've become even more effective at it, except that they have not counted on the demise of the Western civilization due to the fact that they've stolen 65% of the wealth of the world. And this is the problem. And who was it? Oh, who was it? Here, we can close the show out with this one. Who was it that gave those British slaveholders recompense for their loss of losing their slaves? I think it's the person who also sent the carrier pigeon.
It is. In fact, he was the broker that Rothschild used to put in his 15 million pounds. Sir Montefiore also put in his money along with the British government that created the offshore banking system we have today. So the whole thing was rooted in the most debased sin you can possibly imagine. And this is the guy that formed the notions of British Zionism. We're talking about extremely evil people.
These people are greedy beyond a dragon. They're so lustful. And the worst part of all is they're gluttons. They can't get enough. Nothing will appease them. Nothing. So look at the Queen's wealth. Look at all the offshore accounts. They simply steal from every nation on the earth 65% of the wealth. That's an average. In some nations, it's much, much worse, like Russia. But they steal the wealth of the nation, of the common people, for the sake of who? To put it into a bank account, to have wealth that can't even be spent, because if they spent the wealth, it would crash the economies of the world. But it doesn't matter to them. They're such gluttonous pigs that they just keep feeding that desire that cannot be satiated. So once again, your article pulled together not only Pfizer's corruption, but the corruption of the bankers, of the media, of everything that you've been trying to reveal here for the last 2 years, again, in an article that is so appropriate for our time. We can't thank you enough, and just have to ask that you keep doing the good work, because one way or the other.
Thanks to the team.
Yeah, thank you, team. Thank you, Tyler's team, and thank you and the staff writers and the miners, and thank the Conclave for trying to keep me on point. But that's, you know, nobody can do that. And for all of our listeners and subscribers, thank you so much. And all I can say is we take our hat off to you.